Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, if you're a fan of the TV show The Bear, you'll know that season 3 returned to Disney Plus last night and, as usual, featured the high-octane and extremely high-anxiety depiction of life in a commercial kitchen, which might leave you thinking at times, if it's anything like real life, why would anyone do it? A man who might know is JP McMahon, proprietor of Anir and Cafe Bodega in Galway City. Afternoon, JP.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Have you ever watched it?
I have. I watched a couple of episodes and then I was mildly traumatized because it was like PTSD reliving things. I do know the show. I know a few of the guys in it and it's a great show. But no more than the one boiling point that came out, I couldn't even watch the end of that because it was almost like the worst day ever you could have. And if you come home from work and then you just sit down and watch The Bear, it's kind of like just kind of reliving a bit of trauma, you know?
I know what you mean. And do you know people who actually work on the show?
Yeah, I know. I know Matty Madison, who is the plumber in the show. And Matty was actually on board for the first season to train the actors to, I suppose, act like chefs. And then Matty took a small role, and I think he's a producer now. I haven't spoke to him since he kind of blew up. I think he has a million followers now or something like that. But I met him when he was just Matty. We have the odd message between ourselves on Instagram now and then. But look, I think it's a great show. Funnily enough, I was just watching an episode last night, and it's listed as a comedy, which I think is quite funny. And it's in the comedy category for the Grammys. And I suppose there are comic elements, but it does show a side of the industry that I suppose is one of the reasons why it is difficult to hold on to people, because that kind of system or the aspects it shows, particularly in the first season when it shows them kind of working as a chef de cuisine and getting abused and bullied. I mean, for a long time, that was the kind of normal way. And the brigade system came down from the army, the French 19th century chef, Auguste Escoffier. And it was like that. It was very, very brutal. And it's changing now, but I suppose The Bear kind of deals with some aspects of that.
Yeah, and just to dwell with the kind of military aspect of it, even in kitchens today, you'll see people referring to each other. Nobody calls each other by name, and there's kind of a system where, because it seems to be such a restricted space, that you know there's kind of ways of doing things, so people aren't tripping over each other.
Yeah, I mean, in Anir and Cava, we would call each other chef a lot, and it is a kind of respectful thing. And also sometimes it's easier than, I suppose, remembering everyone's name. And I mean, it's not disrespectful. I think it is. If you're a chef in a brigade, I think it's almost like a kind of method of camaraderie or that. But it is particularly in the fine dining world, it gets quite tense then sometimes if you call someone by their name, John, and they're saying, well, I'm not John, I'm chef, or whatever it is.
Right.
So there are, I have encountered that in the past. And some kitchens dramatize it. I'm sure if anyone has been to Noma or other restaurants, when they say chef, they all answer yes, 50 of them at the same time. And it's literally, you're sitting in the dining room, and when my partner was there, she literally jumped every time they said yes. And she's like, is that necessary? And I was like, I don't know. Like there's so much theatre wrapped up in the restaurant industry as well that you forget that it is like a performance, you know. And guests come in and they want to see all these things. Ironically, since The Bear came out, with the people that come into the cooking class, there was a few German people asking me, could they call me chef? And I was like, I mean, you can if you want. But he was like, well, like The Bear, we could say chef. So it is kind of popularizing those. I think it was very surreal for me for three German lads in the cooking class calling me chef, but. And they wanted to use the tweezers. They said, can we get to use the tweezers and say behind you? Which these things, I suppose, it's like the language of a kitchen. I think it's a nice show, but it does, particularly the first season, it shows the brutality of sometimes the service and that high anxiety. And it's very difficult to get beyond that because when everyone wants to eat at the same time on a Friday or Saturday, you're going to create intensity and you're going to create anxiety, you know.
Yeah, I would have thought so. And like he's the main character in it. He's kind of traumatized from his previous experience, as you said. Does that happen a lot, that people kind of burn out or get you know.
Oh, 100%, particularly at the fine dining level. And there's our, like, I always say it's a very, like, I'm 46 now, and I might as well, like, it's almost like thinking in terms of Premiership football. Like, I mean, you're 18 to 28, approximately. They are your years where you are like a powerhouse in the kitchen, and you can move. And I remember staging in one restaurant, and I was 34, and they were calling me Grandpa. Because the oldest person was 24, and they moved like Duracell bunnies, you know. And it is, by the time you get into 35, 40, 45, you need to head to coaching or management, because you can't move the same way that younger chefs do. And they do get burnt out. Chefs work at 1, 2, and 3-star level, and they're 16-hour days, 5 or 6 days a week, and they want to achieve in the same way Olympians achieve, or the World Cup finalists. And I suppose that's what it's all about at that level, and you have to kind of go through it. Yeah, there's no other way of doing it, you know.
Yeah, and so I assume then, if people want to get to that very highest level, not everybody makes it to that level. And then
we end up
working in a Witherspoon's or something.
100%, but there is a benefit, a good side to that, and you do see it in Ireland, where you get a lot of, and you saw it in England after kind of Marco Pierre-White and Gordon Ramsay had trained a lot of people, and there just wasn't enough space to open up a load of fine dining restaurants. And what you find is you get chefs who have trained at a high level, and they open up a pub, or they open up a burger place, or they open up a pizza shop, and then they apply the skills that they learn. And all of a sudden you have like absolutely gastronomic burgers and pizza. There's loads of them around Ireland now. And I think that's a good thing that's coming out of that, because I think what it does is it makes food better all the way down. And I always say, like, I mean, Michelin star restaurants are amazing and they're great. But I mean, if you can't get a good cup of coffee and a croissant or a bun, then, like, I mean, it's food culture is so much more than just fine dining.
Yeah. I assume it's changed now, because women worked there too in kitchens. But was it very kind of macho?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that kind of toxic masculinity from, you could say from the 19th century, but particularly seeing in television from the 60s or 70s on up until the 2000s, where it was kind of cool to bully or berate or abuse people. And there's plenty of instances where people are getting burnt in kitchens when they make mistakes or hit with cling film rolls and all these things. So it's, I hope those days are gone. It's certainly not the way I run my own kitchen, and we run a very calm kitchen. I suppose for me, working in kitchens that were toxic, I always thought when I have my own restaurant, I do not want a kitchen to be like this. But I suppose other people think, or they just say, this is the way it is, and this is what I learned. But I don't think younger people accept what we accepted, or what the other generation accepted. And I think most people would just walk away now and just say, well, I'm not actually doing that anymore.
Yeah, but at the same time, maybe that toxic atmosphere is gone. Say in an ear, in your Michelin star restaurant at the top end, things have to be just exactly right, which must bring a whole heap of pressure.
Yeah, it brings, you could argue it's unnecessary or necessary. It's like, I always say to people, like, when you have a Michelin star restaurant, it's like playing in the cup final every night. Like, I mean, you can either win or lose. You can't draw. And I always think in regular restaurants, they can make mistakes. Like when we have Cava, we do 200 people. You can miss a docket. You might forget that. You have to drop it down later. I mean, the expectations are much lower when people go out. But when they go out to a Michelin star restaurant, the expectations are, this is going to be the best thing ever. They're paying €100, €150, and they want everything to be immaculate. And then that I suppose raises the bar, and it does create this, I suppose, pursuit for perfection. And I suppose I've learned over the years to try and take a step back and relax, and, like, if something is slightly wrong in a dish, to let it go and say, okay, look, there's no point in wasting that whole dish. But in the past, I worked in places where the whole dish would just get thrown out.
Yeah.
If there was something slightly wrong, sometimes the plate would get thrown out with the dish as a demonstration that, well, this isn't good enough. So, I think particularly with relation to waste, for me, and also relation to the younger chefs who are making it, going, look, we'll try and make this better next time. And maybe that's a downfall on my part, because you could say everything has to be perfect and you shouldn't be sending out something that is 99.5%. But you have to realize that sometimes perfection causes trauma and a lot of bad stuff as well in the pursuit. And I think it's not a good way to live, you know.
Yeah, I know, it doesn't sound like. And when you say 99.5%, what would be those kind of relatively small things that, you know, would get a thing thrown out?
You'd laugh at me now. It was something like where someone forgot to put two herbs onto a dish. Now, the customer would not even notice.
Yeah.
Like, they literally, it was up on Instagram, and I said, that dish is missing two herbs. And so I said, guys, like, you have to remember to put these herbs on. These are the five herbs to go in the dish. And, like, but I suppose that's the way, I mean, I think, and it's the way I suppose I need to maintain it. But, like, it could be something like a piece of asparagus that isn't cut properly. That, like, again, the customer might ever notice these things. It's not like you're going into something being overcooked. It's literally, and particularly when you get to three-star level, I worked in a place once where they graded the kale leaves from 1 to 7, and then they put them in separate boxes. And so the kale, you had kale number 1, kale number 2, kale number 3, and you'd spend all day grading kale leaves to put on a dish where you'd have 5 kale leaves sitting on top of a piece of fish. And yeah, it's maddening and kind of crazy, but I suppose that's what people want to do at certain levels, you know?
Yeah, is it taken into account in the design of a restaurant how far the actual kitchen is from the tables in case there's a bit of shouting?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we have a very open kitchen. We have an open kitchen was to try and make sure that, well, the customers can see it and it's not crazy. But in the past, yeah, the kitchen might be in the basement because there might be stuff being flung around. Particularly in London, a lot of the kitchens are in the basement. And there's one place where in the pastry, you couldn't stand up. Like, you had to kneel down working. Well, not kneel down, kind of squat.
Yeah.
And so if you were doing chocolate, you had to squat all day. And surely workers' rights and all those things. I mean, back in 20 years ago, I didn't think about it. You just kind of squatted and said, oh, this is normal. Whereas I don't think nowadays people would say, well, that's kind of not normal. That's really bad. But again, I suppose the way the industry, I suppose, attracted, and I mean, a lot of people love Anthony Bourdain and his writings. The industry attracted what he would say was like pirates, like people that couldn't work anywhere else. Like you couldn't become a plumber or electrician. And I think Ross Lewis once said to me, it was either the Foreign Legion, if you couldn't get into that, then or the army, you became a chef. Whereas nowadays, people like who do really well and they're leaving want to become chefs because of things like the bear. And that's not to say, like, in the past, chefs weren't as smart. It's just that it has shifted. I remember, like, talking to someone who had got 700 points in their leaving and they were in staging with us. And I was like, you want to become a chef? Like, and they were like, yeah. And I was like, you could have become a doctor or something. So there is definitely a shift in younger people because of the, I suppose, the creativity. But I suppose everyone wants to rush towards the top now, and you have chefs who are in their mid-20s who want to be a head chef or want to run a restaurant. And it's that's also one of the difficulties, because I think the internet and Instagram and everything makes everything go so much faster.
Yeah. During your time in your earlier days, did you ever now and again think, I don't want to do this. This is just isn't worth it. Or be tempted to punch somebody. Or did you even punch anyone?
No, I was. I'm too much of a fairy, if I'm allowed to say that. No, I was like, I was never.
You're canceled now.
I'm too kind. Like, I came from a family of 6, and I was generally the one getting punched, as opposed to doing the punches. So I'm usually to run away. But there were moments where I thought, and I did. I went back to college in my early 20s to study art history and English, and I really thought I'd never go back to a kitchen again. And then in third year, I needed a bit of money again, and I went right back working in kitchens. And but for me, it's really important to try and create spaces, because I have the opportunity to do that now and to try and make a kitchen a nice place. I remember being afraid working in Italian restaurants in Scotland, being afraid of the chef, like literally afraid, like whether you might get like run at or with a knife or something.
Yeah.
And that's the way you kind of just went to work and kind of accepted it, you know. And I think we could do a lot better now. And I think the bear shows the two sides of that. And I assume they're trying to get towards some harmonious end where they can have a fine dining kitchen and not have these issues. But at the level of fine dining, I mean, what do you do when someone is paying a lot of money for something and they might go out once a year to this restaurant and it's on a list or whatever and a mistake is made? It's really hard to come back from that, you know?
Sure. Is there something addictive about working in restaurants?
100%. I think all of the things that one may have, like ADHD or dyslexia or whatever else it is, I think people can go into kitchens and then apply their ADHD to a section, and it's the most amazing thing ever. Like, so it's a refuge for people as well who sometimes I think get lost in the system. And it is the adrenaline that you get during a service sometimes it's really hard to capture that elsewhere. And I'm sure sports people have it or performers. And sometimes when you get home, like, it's really hard to go asleep because you've been kind of on high octane all night. And then you get home and then you're like in the bear, you sit down on the couch and you watch some mindless TV and you have a bowl of cereal. And then you fall asleep and you wake up hours later and you're going, God, I've got to go work in a couple of hours. And thankfully, those days are behind me. Well, they're not all behind me. Sometimes I do fall asleep on the couch with a bowl of cereal in my hand. But everyone thinks that you go home and you're making some fantastic dish. You just go home and you eat a bowl of Rice Krispies. Like, it's the last thing you want to think about is food sometimes.
Yeah. JP, thanks a million for speaking with us today. Keep up the good work. That's JP McMahon there, the restaurateur. A couple of comments on that. Eamon says, I had the pleasure to be at the chef's table in Chapter 1. All was quiet during the service. When the chef came to the table, I asked him where was all the shouting, and he laughed. And it was excellent. Says him, yeah, well, Chapter 1 is one of those. It's a high-end restaurant, but it has that lovely feeling. If you ever get the chance of going there, it doesn't feel snooty. There's other kind of Michelin-star restaurants, you know, in Dublin and around the country where, you know, you feel a bit like they're doing you a favour by even letting you in the door. But in Chapter 1, I must say that, you know, you really do feel kind of genuinely welcome there. Another text says, on MasterChef, there was a couple of doctors and the winner was a vet. Says Owen. So, yeah, maybe people kind of harbour those kind of ambitions on the side. Back to the TV show, The Bear. That episode with Jamie Lee Curtis was so intense. It stayed with me for days afterwards. It was an assault on the senses. That was one where they had the Christmas party. Yeah, that was very, very intense. Listening to that chef talk about The Bear reminds me of watching This Is Going to Hurt about the NHS. Another absolutely excellent series. And someone wants to know, why is it called The Bear? I won't be watching it. I don't want to see behind the curtain of fine dining. I don't want indigestion. Is there a bear? Yes, it's a restaurant run by a family of bears. That's the basic premise.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.